Moncrief on News Talk.
Time to look at stories from outside the country. Jonathan De Burka Butler is here with us once again. Afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you going
now? The Himalayas we're going to go to first, where there's a rubbish problem.
There is. We're going to go to the Nepali side of the Himalayas, I guess. Specifically, we're going to look at Everest, Nuptse and Lhotse. Okay, three peaks there. And ever since 2019, the army have been conducting an annual cleanup after the climbing season ends. So the climbing season apparently tends to be in the springtime because that's when there's least snow. It's a little bit warmer and the wind isn't as bad, apparently. But as you can imagine, it's not, you know, when you go and climb Mount Everest, it's not that you park your car at Campbell's Pub and climb up to Kirkpatrick and come back down for a couple of pints. People are up there for, you know, a week, nearly 2 weeks, right? So they have to bring food with them and everything else that goes with food, what goes in must come out, so on and so forth. So they leave an awful lot of rubbish, and they actually reckon that there's about 50 tons of waste up there still, right? So ever since 2019, they've been doing this annual cleanup and they've issued the report. Now, they told us that they have said that they've removed 11 tons of rubbish, 4 corpses and a skeleton from Mount Everest and these two other peaks up there. They reckon, as well as the 50 tons that's still of rubbish that's still up there, there are another 200 bodies up in Everest that are not recovered yet.
Yeah, because I understand that's an ongoing problem with bodies, and that people who are climbing have to pass bodies that are frozen in the snow.
Yeah, absolutely,
kind of
and you can imagine it, because I mean, it's getting, over the last couple of years, everybody and anybody is going up there to climb Mount Everest. So they issue permits for it. They're $11,000 a pop. This year, 421 climbers went up. Now, that doesn't include the Sherpas that go with them as well. But that's down from a record-breaking number of 478 last year, right? And so what they're seeing is that people are getting delayed because there's queues forming to get up to the top, and that's adding to the difficulties that climbers are having, and it's contributing to some of the deaths. So there's been 8 so far this year. There was 19 last year. So various different bodies within Nepal are looking at doing something about stemming the flow of climbers going up to the top of Mount Everest.
Yeah.
So it looks like they're going to reduce the number of permits that can go up there. And they will probably, or in fact, not probably, I'm fairly sure that they are increasing the amount that those permits are going to cost. So they're going to go up from about $11,000. That doesn't include your assurance or your guide, by the way, up to about $15,000 in the next 2 years.
Yeah. At the same time, I imagine, though, there's pressure in terms of it brings in revenue.
Oh, sure it does. Yeah. It's a huge amount of revenue brings into the country. I mean, it's under the Department of Tourism, and they have their own mountaineering section within that looks after this. So you can be sure it brings in an awful lot of revenue, but there's probably better and more sustainable ways of managing it.
Right. The Democratic Republic of Congo, we're going to go to next, where the trial of people who attempted a coup has just started.
Yeah, this was a funny one, because I saw this last month when it happened on the 19th of May, but it was kind of a nothing event. It passed off. A few shots were fired in the capital.
But wasn't there an American somehow weirdly?
This is the interesting part of it, right? So now what's happened is that 51, the coup failed, right? And 6 people were killed. And the leader of the coup, a man by the name of Christian Malanga, was killed, right? Now, he was the head of a group called the New Zaire Movement, right? And he's the fellow who led the coup. Now, when it all ended, a number of people had been arrested, and he was dead, sorry, and a number of people had been arrested. So there were 51 individuals who late last week, went on trial, all right? So that's actually started in the Ndolo military prison in the capital there, right? It's being streamed on television and broadcast on radio. So you can imagine that the president is trying to make major propaganda out of this, okay?
Yeah.
So anyway, this guy, Christian Malanga, he was a politician in the Democratic Republic of the Congo before he left and got refugee status in the US, where he became a US citizen. He had a family there, all right, and one member of his family, namely his son, Marcel, is among the 51 people who are now on trial. So he's a US citizen. Now, he's not the only US citizen there. There are 2 others. And one of them, very interestingly, is a friend of his, a man by the name of Tyler Thompson. Now, he's a 21-year-old white guy from Utah, okay? Now, he was, according to his family, He was told by the Malanga family, hey, why don't you come to the DRC with us? We're going to go on a trip of a lifetime and, you know, you're mates with Marcel and we'll go around and have a look at the country and we'll have a great time. The family weren't, have no idea how he got wrapped up on this coup. But if you dig a little bit deeper, there's an indication from another friend of theirs who didn't go to the didn't go on this trip to the DRC. His name is Daniel Gonzalez. And in an interview with the Associated Press, he told them that he had been offered between $50,000 and $100,000 to serve as a security guard for the elder Malanga, for Christian Malanga, the leader of this group.
Ah.
So I suspect that what has happened here is that young Tyler Thompson may have been offered money to go as part of this security team. And whether he was aware or not, he got caught up in this coup, thought he could make a quick buck, and now he finds himself on trial. And I think what's fascinating about this is that this, I think, is going to grow legs simply because he's a white US citizen on trial in the DRC and his family is trying to get an awful lot of coverage.
Yeah, and because certainly the reportage I've seen is that he was kind of
innocent.
Yeah, well, an unwilling dupe, or, you know, maybe not the brightest to go, oh, there's a coup going on. How did this happen?
Yeah, yeah.
But if somebody offers you, if that actually is proven that he was offered money, that might kind of change the case for him a bit. Qatar, we're going to go to next, where a gay man is facing, where he's been sentenced.
Yeah, so this is a British-Mexican man by the name of Manuel Guerrero Avina. He lived for quite a time in Qatar. He was working, for an airline there. I think he was an air host of some sort. Anyway, he says there's two sides to this story, as there often is. He says that he was basically caught in part of a sting operation or entrapment or whatever you want to call it, right? He was living his life, no problem there, had never had any hassle from the authorities before. And he was on Grindr, the app for dating app for gay people. He got in touch with a man named Gio, and Gio and himself agreed to meet at this man's house, at Avina's house, right? When he went to open the door, instead of Gio being there, he was met by the Qatari authorities who went into his house and, according to him, planted drugs in the house. Okay, on that premise, they arrested him. They brought him back to prison and they tortured him. This is what he says now. Ooh. And they're basically saying that they tried to get him to reveal names and addresses of other gay men in Qatar. All right. Now, the authorities in Qatar are saying not the case at all. It's nothing to do with his homosexuality. He was caught with drugs in his possession. We later did a test on him and he was full of drugs, basically. Right?
Yeah.
And that's that's the reason he's been given a 6-month jail sentence, a fine, and he's also been given a deportation order. So it looks like if he pays the fine, he'll get to leave the country and that 6-month sentence will be suspended. But in the meantime, he's come out and he's criticised the authorities and says that he's absolutely innocent and he's been targeted because he's gay.
Is homosexuality illegal in Qatar?
It is. I'm sure you remember at the World Cup there was a huge thing around that. Yeah, so it rears its head again.
Yeah. Australia, and we hear and see stories about deepfakes all the time. This is an interesting kind of spin on that. It's being used in an investment scam.
Yeah, so this is specifically to do with politicians whose images and voices are being used in investment scams. So far, four politicians have been caught in this. The finance minister Katie Gallagher, foreign minister Penny Wong, a senator by the name of Bridget McKenzie, and the former PM who we've spoken about a good few times, Scott Morrison. Right, so their images have been used, and obviously their voices have been taken, put in through AI or whatever, and they've been promoting these investment scams. Now, we'll look at just one case if we can. So the case of Senator Bridget McKenzie, she was actually, an interview was used that she did on Sky News, right, where both of their voices were manipulated. And obviously, when she went on the show, she was talking about politics. But what they did was they took the audio away. They manipulated the voice to make it look as if she was promoting this investment where, quote, every Australian will receive $7,700 in the first week. This was then pushed on Facebook. And interestingly, in one case, it was boosted with an investment of 15,000 Australian dollars. And that meant that it reached 250,000 Australians. Now, I don't know how many of those Australians bit or invested in this particular company, but the fact that somebody boosted this post by putting $15,000 behind it would suggest that there's money to be made in these particular scams. So obviously investigations have been launched. They've looked into it and they've seen that the admins have been based in countries like the Ukraine, Vietnam, currencies from all over the world. So these things are being done from everywhere and posted through Facebook and tried to hit their intended target in Australia.
Yeah, but it's not clear who's done any of this, though. And
not yet, no. They haven't quite got to the bottom of it yet, but... It's terrible that they're using these politicians in this manner. So they've had to issue warnings and let people know to watch out for this kind of thing.
Zambia, we're going to go to finally, where 22 Chinese nationals have been jailed.
Yeah, not dissimilar to our last story. This is in Zambia, where, as you said, 22 Chinese nationals were jailed over cyber crimes that included internet fraud and online scams that were targeting people in Zambia, Singapore, Peru and the United Arab Emirates. So again, right across the world. Now, the alarm was raised back in April of this year when police basically saw that the number of complaints around money going missing inexplicably and various different scams online had spiked in Zambia. So they were able to thread the clues together and they finally went back to a business that was named the Golden Top Support Services, right? Okay. And this was employing 77 people. So various different agencies raided this particular place. They found these 22 Chinese nationals and then the others were Zambians between the age of 20 and 25, okay, who were working the scams using various different SIM cards and trying to lure people into giving their money away. Now, it seems that these Chinese nationals were leading this whole scam up, right? Because they're the ones who've been sentenced to between 7 and 11 years in prison, while the Zambians have been freed on bail with a rap on the knuckles at this particular point.
Okay.
But interesting that they're taking action on it, and very interesting that it moves so quickly, April to June, and they're in jail already.
Are they maybe saying something to China by being harsher on the Chinese who are involved in this?
I did wonder about that, whether, you know, Zambia is looking at this and saying, you know, there's other countries in the neighbourhood that have a reputation for this and we don't want to get it.
Yes.
But I'm not 100% sure. It'll be interesting to see if anything develops diplomatically over this story.
Yeah. Right, so what should we look out for over the next week or so?
Yeah, a few things to look out for. The G7 summit will be hosted by Giorgia Meloni this time, and that begins on Thursday in Puglia. Friday the 14th, on the same day the Euros start, the Premier League transfer window opens, so I know you'll be watching that. And then it's Eid al-Adha, as opposed to Eid al-Fatir, on Sunday, June 16th.
Also Bloom's Day. Jonathan, Indeed. Thanks a million. As ever, Jonathan de Burka-Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.